Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. You can follow us online at Macroaggressions on Twitter, at Macroaggressions Podcast on Instagram, and you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Big thanks to our sponsors. They make this show happen. Preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the place to go if you want to get storable food. My Patriot Supply was nice enough to build a landing page for us. You can go in there and get a month's supply. You can get 3 months supply. If you're already set up, you can get some and have it shipped to your family across the country or whatever. You can take care of all of your needs right there. In about 10 minutes, you can get yourself sorted out. I wish we didn't have to think about this stuff, but I'll tell you what, the theme, sort of running theme of this show is let's get honest about the situations and then let's be proactive instead of reactive. And if you've got storable food, you are a little less dependent on society. And that's obviously not going to be a long-term fix, but you'll need it. If you need it, you'll have it. And it's good to have. So, and it'll last you 25 years. So I'll tell you what, if you're in the market for something like this, preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the place to go to get yourself sorted out pretty quick. And also thanks to the folks over at EMP Shield. They are building a device that works on your car, on your home, on your motorhome or boat, if you have one, if you've got a generator, you can install this device and it will protect your vehicles against solar flares, lightning strikes, and also EMPs, if we, God forbid, we have one. I certainly hope we don't have one, and I'm not trying to manifest this, and I'm not trying to bring this into the world or anything like that, but it is a weird time, and I'll tell you what, if you're looking for something like this, EMPShield.com is the place to go. You can find installation videos. You can do it yourself. It installs like a type 2 surge protector. So there's ways that you can do that. It's fitted to a household circuit breaker with just 4 wires. So it's not overly complicated. So I'll tell you what, best thing to do, go to the website, read up about it, see what you think. They have bundle packages. And if you use the promo code macro on your way out, it will save you a bunch of money. So EMPShield.com is the place to go for that. Well, I'm excited about this conversation because we started it on TNT Radio a couple weeks ago, and we needed to continue it here on Macro Aggression. So I have the founder of the Freedom Articles, the author of Break Your Chains, Exposing the Grand Conspiracy and Presenting the Way Out, Makia Freeman. Hey, Makia, it's good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad you're back on because, unfortunately, in case you didn't notice, it looks like we're headed towards, I don't know, World War III or something. World War IV, if you ask Alex Jones. But it is crazy. This is how, you know, when we look back on history, World War I, World War II, and how did it start? And we wind up in these massive wars. When you examine the trigger point, it's always something very small. You know, it's something very, as Archduke Franz Ferdinand gets shot. It's some little thing. And you've got Austria and Serbia fighting against each other. And you go, oh, there's just a little skirmish there. These said that doesn't include us, doesn't bother me, doesn't involve me. I'll just watch it. And then it spreads. And then that team has alliances and the other team has alliances and they start to get pulled in. And I'm watching this stuff in Gaza and Israel and I'm getting World War I vibes, more so than World War II, but World War I. A little thing starts to draw in one group. And then they have to bring their buddies in. And next thing you know, it's just a massive street fight. And I don't like any of this. But unfortunately, I think that we are on a path towards war. You've been writing about this. And I was just reading one of your articles a couple nights ago. And I'd love to talk to you about this because I'm anti-war at my core. You know, and I understand wars happen. And so I'm not like a pacifist. I'm not like, just beat me up. I'm not going to fight back. I would certainly fight back in a situation, but I don't like the idea of these wars. You've been covering things like this for a long time. What's your take on where we're headed in the Middle East?
Yeah, there's a lot to it. So a lot of different aspects, but I'll start with what you said about the alliances. I am totally in agreement with you on that because I think even George Washington warned the US about, now it was a young country, it was getting involved in these foreign entanglements, because this is what happens. You have alliances that are made and then the politicians say, oh, well, this is just for our mutual defense. You know, it's good for us to be friends with this other country or this bigger country, because then if we're attacked, we have someone that's defending us. But the thing is, if you look at the whole picture, if everyone does that, or if we have, normally it seems like there's two sides that have developed, which is what was happening in World War One. Well, then you have suddenly three or four or five countries all on one team, and then you have another alliance, and then they have mutual agreements, like kind of like NATO does with Article 5. And so then if anyone gets attacked, all the others are obligated to defend it. And so then it's the whole setup is made so that you can easily have a war between 6, 8, 10 countries if any one of them get in a little skirmish, a little fight. And that's insane. So the whole setup is really important to pay attention to. And looking back at the history of geopolitics, this is what was happening in the late 1800s, early 1900s. By then, the Rothschilds already had incredible power on the continent of Europe. They had their man Cecil Rhodes in South Africa. They had like a lot of machinations going on, and they kind of figured out that the best alliance that they wanted was actually to make an alliance through Britain with France and Russia, and then to isolate Germany. And this was all figured out, you know, a good like 20 years before World War One actually erupted. And you can look at the history of that. But there were a lot of these secret alliances were made where not even the supposed people in charge of the government, like the cabinet or the parliament or whatever of that country, knew about it. They would just get a few key people in Britain or France or Russia to sign these deals. No one really knew about it. And then suddenly they found out right on the eve of, like, before World War One was happening. I definitely think these military alliances are dangerous. And we've already seen with this Hamas-Israeli conflict that Hezbollah is saying, "Hey, if you invade Gaza, Israel, we're gonna like attack you." And we already know that Hezbollah and Iran have a very close relationship, and so Iran is gonna maybe not feel obligated to help Hamas, but we'll probably help Hezbollah. So if Hezbollah gets involved, then Iran gets involved. Well, as you mentioned in my book, I have a whole chapter on geopolitics and talking about all the chess pieces that have been being maneuvered into place. Iran has already been moving closer to Russia and China over the last 10 years, especially. It's about to join BRICS, or maybe it has joined BRICS now. So there's already like the financial, economic, political kind of connection happening. There's going to be military treaties. So then if we have Iran involved, well, suddenly then we have Russia and China involved. Okay, we're at World War III, just like that. It's it has the potential to be an incredibly dangerous situation. And if it becomes a regional war between these countries, then it could easily become a world war.
Yeah, for sure. And we've got Iran joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization with Russia and China and all the stands, you know. So now you've got 40% of the world's population involved in that, right? So like you said, if Hezbollah gets involved, which they said they would, and as of the recording of this, we're at the end of October. So as this goes out, you know, listen, this is a fluid situation. So we'll get this episode out as soon as possible. But there's going to be a bit of a lag. There's going to be some things that happen between where we record this and when people hear about actually listen to this. So if you've got Hezbollah coming in, and then you've got Iran saying, well, we'll support you because we have this agreement to support you, we have this relationship, then in Iran is part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Now you've got Russia and China coming in. And so this is unfortunately how it starts, right? It feels like the pieces on the chessboard have been set up in advance and they're just waiting for somebody to make this one move. And we've seen this move. So can we give us a little background on sort of the history of Hamas? I mean, not a full breakdown, but I mean, I think a lot of people that are coming into this topic make the assumption, and I'm not even really necessarily blaming them for making this assumption. They assume Israel is one team, Hamas is another team. That's the enemy team. And that they're fighting against each other. But when you dig into the founding of Hamas, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. It feels a little bit like controlled opposition. What's your take on how this thing started?
Yeah, it is like that. It is controlled opposition. There's a theme that runs through when you study these big superpowers, the British Empire, the US Empire, but also Zionism and Israel. I mean, since Israel's founding in 1948, it has committed a whole long list of crimes. We're talking about the way that it acquired nuclear weapons and nuclear secrets. It had a hand in the JFK assassination. Then it went on to basically every president really since JFK has been in Israel's pocket. Lyndon Johnson totally was. He was in charge during the USS Liberty, where Israel just blatantly attacked and killed Americans there. Then Israel had a huge hand in 9/11, and you know, I could go on and on about it. But the point is that the Mossad and their intelligence services are very clever. They specialize in things like assassinations, false flag operations, and so. They've learned how to kind of manipulate things. And one thing they've realized is that you need to have, it works a lot better if there's controlled opposition so that it looks like you're the victim when you're not. And so what happened with Hamas is that in 1987, Israel decided that they would help get Hamas off the ground by funding it because they wanted a counterweight to the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO. And it became one of those things where it's a bit like a monster that they created that became out of control. But even though Hamas appears to be Israel's enemy, and I'm not excusing in any way what they did or did not do on October 7th, and we can get into that a little later. I think there's a lot of atrocity propaganda around it. There's a lot of exaggeration, but undoubtedly they did something. And I'm not excusing in any way the killing of civilians.
Of course, no.
However, It does work to Israel's advantage to have an extreme organization like this. And it was we saw this happening just 5, 6, 7 years ago during parts of the Syrian war where there was ISIS running around the Middle East, right? When there's an extreme organization like that that's already very extreme and doing things, well, Israel can then exaggerate what they're doing. It can claim these guys are barbaric and extreme and they're horrible and like they're the enemy, they're pure evil. And then they can galvanize support Netanyahu's, who's plagued by corruption scandals. He can galvanize support behind his government and he can get the sympathy of all the West on his side and say, hey, we've got to like fight these barbarians, right? So it actually really helps them to have an enemy like that. It's to their advantage. And Netanyahu was on record just in 2019 saying that if you care about you know, stopping the Palestinians from achieving their own state, then you need to keep funding Hamas. I mean, he said this is just 4 years ago. So this is not something where they created in 1987 and it became out of control. I mean, this has been a deliberate strategy for them to fund an extreme organization like this so that they then have an excuse to bomb Gaza or to stop a Palestinian state or to get sympathy from the West. It suits a lot of their agendas.
Yeah, and it's got a very 9/11 feel to it as well, as this attack where it's like, oh, our defenses were down. I mean, we spend $1 trillion a year in the U.S. military, but we had all our planes elsewhere. We did, mistakes were made, and they flew planes off course for an hour, and nobody did anything about it. Oh boy, what a catastrophic lapse of our security forces. What bad luck, right? And then you see this with Israel, and they've got the most secure border in the world, and they don't, they know when anything's coming next to that border. And then, but magically, they just didn't see it. And there's this big gaping hole, and people and troops are running through and coming in, pouring in. The IDF doesn't respond for hours and hours. And, if I didn't know any better, I would think that they allowed it to happen. You know, a little problem, reaction, solution. Now, in the first World Trade Center, the one that didn't really go off very well, and I think it killed a couple people, they realized that they needed a big body count. If you want to pass sweeping legislation and really get the public on your side, and as you talked about, galvanizing the support behind Netanyahu or George W. Bush or whoever, you need a body count. You needed it in Oklahoma City, you needed it in 9/11, and you needed it in this event in Israel as well. And I have seen time and time again that the Israelis have zero problem sacrificing their own. They use their own country as a laboratory for the Pfizer shots, for the COVID shots. I mean, they've straight up said that. Netanyahu, again, I think he's no friend to the Jewish people or the Israeli people. And I think he's a devious dude. And so I feel like it seems like a problem, reaction, solution, like allowed to happen, given the justification to now create the support that you need to wipe out the group. They've always wanted to do it. Is this right? I mean, they speak openly about how they want to destroy these people. And then isn't it, it's like almost like, what would you do if I broke through your wall, came into your country, started murdering all these women and children, kidnapping them and beheading people and ripping babies out of pregnant women and doing all stuff? What would you do to me? Israel's, well, we would obliterate you. Exactly. So why would I do that? Why would I do that unless I was being made to do it? And it feels like a trap to me. It feels like this is being allowed to happen. When you saw this, knowing how secure that border is, what was your reaction?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense that this could have just happened. And this is a key question to ask, whether when we look back in history at the false flag operations and the assassinations, there's always a group that's in power that actually, has the control, has the power to call off the normal security arrangements. And so, recall when JFK was in his limo and he was making that final turn, mm-hmm. Suddenly the secret security was called off. So who had the power to do that so that the assassins could take an open shot at him? It's 9/11. Who had the power to order things to stand down? I mean, Dick Cheney had some of the power, but there was a whole apparatus that was in place, that was basically defusing, like cutting out the normal security protocols so that the normal thing couldn't happen, so that this event could happen. So exactly the same thing was happening here. And there's already been some really brave Israeli former soldiers and intelligence people who've worked on the wall or on the fence, the Gaza area. And they know that there's no way this could have happened unless all these things were battalions that were moved to the West Bank instead of Gaza. There was a deliberate standing down of the normal security response. I mean, this fence is so high tech that apparently it can detect a cockroach moving. But even if you think that's an exaggeration, there are a number of Israelis who've worked on it who said it can easily detect a bird or a cat or a fox. So how the hell did a Palestinian tractor make it through? And even if somehow that happened, how the hell was there no response for 6 to 7 hours? I mean, there were Hamas people flying in on hang gliders, motorized hang gliders, for God's sake. I mean, when you look at what the the technology and the money that Israel gets and the missiles. I mean, it shot a couple of hospitals just in the last few weeks. I've seen the footage of that. I mean, those missiles are going so fast. I mean, shooting someone on a hang glider is a joke. I mean, that should be like just an automatic thing that, you know, but what's also staggering about this is that a number of reports have come out that the Israelis were involved in shooting the hostages. So when they finally did arrive after 6 or 7 hours, they came in and apparently they just shot a lot of everyone who was there, and they probably killed some Hamas militants, but they also killed some Israeli civilians who were meant to be hostages. And so, but of course, then they just blamed it all on Hamas. And so, and there was also recently a woman that was released by Hamas, and she was, she looked like she was 80 or 90, and she actually shook hands with the Hamas soldier. And then she did an interview and basically said that Hamas treated her very kindly, and they gave her medical assistance and food and whatever she needed. And so when, you know, the Zionists control the Western mainstream media narrative, Israel has all these, you know, highly advanced tech companies that have software backdoors and all this. So they've got control of the media, and they're very good at controlling the narrative online. But yet we have these bits of information coming out that actually, you know, maybe Hamas is not really as bad as what it's being painted. And there's just some things that don't really add up about the whole thing. It's really important, I think, when you're looking at this, to realize there's going to be a fog of war. There's going to be so much propaganda that we're inundated with, and it's hard to know what's real. And so it's important just the first few days and weeks when you're wading through this to realize so much of this could be propaganda and misinformation.
Yeah. And look, Israel is, they're great at the tech stuff. Their startups are almost unmatched in terms of security forces. Whitney Webb does great work on a lot of that stuff. You see that the ex-IDF soldiers, a lot of them will go into tech startups as well. They encourage them to do that. A lot of like Carbine and companies like that were formed by ex-IDF soldiers. And then you look at the board of directors, financed by Ehud Barak, financed by Jeffrey Epstein, financed by all these bad guys. And you start to go, oh, geez, I mean, this is supposed to be our closest ally in the Middle East. And yet, boy, I mean, we have some questions about that. We've got questions about the Dimona nuclear plant. We've got questions about the Liberty. We've got questions about 9/11. We've got questions about all kinds of things. And I am very, you know, I'm very suspicious of Israel. And I think what's interesting is that, I'll tell you, they've done a great job of convincing people that an attack, a criticism, a verbal attack, not even a physical attack, just a verbal criticism of Israel equals you hate Jewish people. They've done a masterful job of that. I mean, it's not reality, but you have so many people that have found themselves in a situation where they are self-censoring to be on the safe side, right? So they don't even want to say anything that might be misconstrued as criticism of Israel. Let them, you know, especially if you work in certain industries, you work in the media, you work in Hollywood, you work in banking. I mean, God forbid you criticize Israel's response to anything. They'll run you out of town, make you do a dance, kick you out of college, shame you in a mobile billboard saying these people have been saying, you know. And listen, I'm not going to go out there and participate in a rally where I say Hamas is like the good guys and this is great or anything. I don't like any of the killings and I don't like any of this stuff, but to pretend like Israel is somehow above reproach is laughable. They have been a terrorist organization as far as I am concerned, and I feel like a lot of the destabilization in the Middle East is due to Israel. What have you seen over the last couple of years? I mean, what's the response to the surrounding countries that have to, you know, have to share space with this country that has a very different ideology? I mean, are they ready for a war? Do they want a war, or do they just want to pretend like Israel doesn't exist?
Well, I mean, I think one of Israel's fundamental problems is that they want to have a Jewish state, and they feel like they were promised that. But if you actually go back and look at the Balfour Declaration, it actually says in the very, you know, wording of it that His Majesty's England looks favorably upon the creation of a Jewish state, provided that it doesn't, you know, discriminate or hurt or basically make things worse for the existing population there. But they kind of forgot about that part. And so they kind of just went in there and act like the colonial settlers. And right from the start, there was terrorist groups, Irgun, for example, that were just completely, you know, genociding the Palestinians, wiping them out, taking their villages. I mean, so, you know, Israel loves to say, well, Israel has the right to exist. But yes, but I mean, what about the Palestinians' right to exist? And how do you kind of justify a right to exist when you're basically forcibly taking the land of the people that are there and killing them? Like, so, you know, they've never resolved that question. And there's been lots of movements over the years where it seemed like peace might be close, you know, and there was an Israeli prime minister who got kind of close, but then he was assassinated. That was Rabin. So, you know, like, I think there are Israelis that are waking up to this, and just, you know, of course there's going to be an emotional reaction in some of them of like wanting revenge, and that's understandable. But there's also a part of them that's like, if we keep attacking, we keep doing this, this is just going to go on and on, and it's already gone on for so long. The only way this is going to stop is if both sides just go, you know what, we actually really need to find a solution where we can both live side by side and stop attacking each other, because every time one side attacks, then the other side feels like they need to get revenge. There's a new generation that gets born into that hears the horror stories, or that sees, you know, has their family members disappear. And so then in their heart, they have the burning desire for revenge, and it just never ends.
Well, it doesn't help that the Mossad's motto is, by way of deception, thou shalt do war, right? And then you go, well, that doesn't sound good. And then you find out that the Mossad is involved in the creation of Hamas, and you go, by way of deception? Hang on a second. That would qualify as deception, right? To pretend that you were somebody else. It feels like the first war is the information war, right? The narrative war. Like, let's get control of the narrative. Let's make sure that everybody right off the bat knows how they're supposed to feel. You're supposed to be angry. This group over here, you're supposed to hate this group, and you're supposed to feel like you were attacked, and this was an unprovoked attack. And you know, every time I hear these unprovoked attacks, I it reminds me that this one here, it says unprovoked, and it reminds me of Ukraine and Russia, and Russia's unprovoked attack. Well, neither of these were really unprovoked attacks. I mean, you can only push these groups so far before they respond. And in the case of Russia and Ukraine was most definitely attacking them for 7 years. They were slaughtering people in this Russian, ethnically Russian region. So it's like, it wasn't exactly unprovoked. And so now here we are, we've got another, quote, unprovoked attack. And I wonder if... it seems like we're headed down the same path. Why would the Palestinians decide now, this month, why would the Palestinians decide that now's the time to start a war with Israel? It doesn't seem to me that they are. Typically, you want to kind of gear up for a war, right? Get yourself ready, get the strategy together, get your weapons and tanks and generals and alliances and all these things built up. This seems like a region where they barely have drinking water. If they were following Sun Tzu's Art of War instruction manual, this would not be the time for them to attack, and yet they did. Are we dealing with another one of these unprovoked attacks that actually is, in fact, a provoked attack?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'll talk about that in a sec, but just coming onto Hamas, this is something I actually talked about in a recent video, where I don't feel like Hamas can really say that they're representing the Palestinian people, because they must have known that if they were to do this to Israel, Israel is just going to totally come in and want to absolutely exterminate and obliterate them, right? And so how does that help the Palestinian people in Gaza? It doesn't, because Israel really has no compunction, no scruples about bombing hospitals and killing civilians, none at all. And there's a huge percentage of Gaza, I read something like 65% of the population is under 24 years of age. Mm-hmm. Massive amount of children. Israel doesn't care. It'll kill the children it needs to try to, you know, achieve its objectives. So if Hamas had just taken a minute to really think about this, they must have realized this kind of helps. So then that leads, you know, credence to the theory that perhaps Hamas is still being controlled, and it's maybe not controlled by Israel, but it doesn't seem to be representing the Palestinian people. Likewise, the Israeli government doesn't really seem to be representing the Israeli people. As you pointed out, they treated them like lab rats during the COVID scandemic. And And then we have the reports of the Israeli IDF, you know, standing down for 6 or 7 hours, letting it happen, and then coming in and killing Israeli civilians anyway, and then blaming it on Hamas. So neither government on this side are really representing the people. And that's one of the tricks of this whole thing, is where you have common people around the world who have more in common with each other than their governments. And that happened in World War One with, you know, the French and the Germans. They were fighting each other in trenches, but they took a ceasefire. And then they were like, you know, friends for like, during the ceasefire, you know, singing Christmas carols or whatever. And then the next day, oh, that's okay, we're going to go back into the trenches and shoot each other. Like, it's crazy. But governments do this to divide populations and then denounce who isn't playing along with their country or their government as unpatriotic. And so this is just another trick to control people. But I like your point about the so-called unprovoked nature of it. And you're right. I mean, if you look at Ukraine, the whole thing that the US did and the whole build up to that, the 2014 coup, Vicky Nuland, the Zionist neocon, boasting that they'd pumped $5 billion into Ukraine to achieve that coup, the way that they got the legitimately elected president out, Yanukovych, and they put in their puppets, they got the Nazis and the neo-Nazis there into power. Then they started demonizing Russia. They started actually attacking the citizens, Russian-speaking citizens in the Donbass. So all of this had been going on for 8 years. And so people have to realize that things aren't black and white, and there's all these nuances. And actually, I read something that Putin said recently, which was interesting. I mean, I don't entirely agree with it, but I at least, you know, I think I respect his point of view. And he said that he doesn't feel like Russia really started this war, that's why he called it a special military operation. And he believes the US started the war in 2014. And he's going in 8 years later with his limited military operation to finish the war. Now, I don't entirely agree with that, but that's a perspective, and I can see what he's saying. And I mean, it is a very difficult situation where you have a country that used to be a territory of yours, or, you know, and it still has like Russian speaking people, to see it basically like siphoned off and then overtaken with Nazis and brought into the Western orbit. And then they're talking, you know, that Zelensky was talking about nukes right before Russia went in. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to deal with when they're treating Russia and the Russian speaking Ukrainians like that. I mean, it's obviously not unprovoked. Obviously not. Same thing here. I mean, Israel and the Palestinians don't have an equal relationship. It is a settler settled or colonizer colonized relationship, and so it is understandable that there are going to be frustrations and anger that boil out sometimes because the Gazans are being denied basic human rights. I mean, access to water, electricity, and basic things like that. And it's incredibly difficult for them to live under those conditions in like what's basically like an open air surveillance prison.
Yeah. And isn't Netanyahu on the record saying, I want them at the very least a functioning level I can get them at without it being like a war crime or something? He wants it very, very minimum.
Yeah. Right? Yes. I mean, if you look at how the Israelis have treated them, there was a point at which they were controlling how much food went in, and they were calculating how many Gazans live there and what their caloric requirements were. And then so they would deliberately limit the food, so they were getting just enough food to, like, you know, survive, but nothing more than that. I mean, this is the way that they've been treated. So I mean, of course, when you treat people like that, of course there's going to be some people that are going to react violently. It's human nature.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what really scares me is that the United States is parking carrier groups off the coast in the Eastern Mediterranean. I don't like that at all. I feel like when you're Joe Biden and you're doing a poor job, and everybody in the country is starting to look at you like you're a decrepit old man. This is not going to work. You're putting your political rival and trying to put him in prison. Your son, your crack smoking son, is in trouble for all of his shenanigans. You're getting busted for now. They're starting to investigate you for the money laundering and the, you know, all these things. I've seen plenty of instances in the past where American presidents have tried to distract from poor approval ratings by starting wars and getting people distracted with other things while they, you know, so that they don't focus on the crimes committed by the administration. And the Biden administration is filled with criminals, and they're filled with Zionists, and every administration's filled with Zionists, let's be honest, but theirs are also very bloodthirsty, and they want this. Do you see a scenario in which the United States actually gets pulled into this?
Well, you know, to answer that, I'll just say that, just like I talked about how Hamas doesn't really represent the Palestinian people, the Israeli government not representing the Israeli people. I mean, the US government in no way represents the American people. I mean, it's been hijacked a long time ago. We all know that presidents are puppets, and Biden is probably like the most classic example of a puppet you could ever have in a US president. I mean, the guy's not fully there. He wasn't fully there even when he was elected. I mean, people that were listening to him could tell that he was struggling to like finish sentences and speak coherently. Yet somehow he was like magically elected by the biggest margin in history. I mean, the whole thing is just such a joke. And then he is up to his neck in corruption. And sure, like a lot of politicians and presidents are, but Biden in particular, I mean, with all the dealings he's done with Ukraine and China and using Hunter and all the like obvious lies about it, it's just staggering. It's honestly just staggering, like how corrupt the guy is. But yeah, he doesn't know, you know, night from day at the moment. And It kind of reminds me of what George Carlin said, that the US can't really do anything anymore. It's lost all its manufacturing base. It shipped that off to China, but it knows how to bomb countries, all right. And it can certainly like bomb. It's good at bombing brown people, you know.
Yeah.
And so like that's kind of what the US just does these days. The US government is divorced from like the needs and representing the American people. And then there is a faction inside the US government, the deep state, the Zionists, the neocons that basically have hijacked foreign policy. And it's very hard to kind of, no matter what president gets in, to kind of wrest control of that, you know, get it back into like the hands of like what should be happening. And so they just go full steam ahead with war. Like there's just bases all around the world. They send carrier ships there, you know, that seems to be all they know how to do, is just bomb countries and invade and like orchestrate coups and assassinate. And that's just what they do. Like, so it's just so out of control.
That's the if all you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail sort of philosophy, right? So, but I'm curious about this, because a couple of months ago, maybe must have been maybe over a year ago, in Lebanon, there was a huge explosion at the port, and they said, oh, it was I don't know what they said. Grain storage, ammonium nitrate, or fireworks, or some bullshit story that didn't make any sense. Do we know what that was? Because that seemed to me like a sort of explosion that was reserved for, I mean, certainly it looked like it was some sort of, I don't know, I want to say like rod of God technology. We've seen stuff like that before in the past, maybe in Shenzhen or in Tianjin, China. A couple of years ago, we had this massive explosion and people were like, that's rod of God technology. That's satellites dropping tungsten rods the size of telephone poles down and on targets. And I see that Beirut explosion that they said was, I think they said it was like it was heard in other countries. I think they said the explosion was heard over 150 miles away. And that's like incomprehensible. So were we involved in that? We, you and me. No, was the United States government involved in that? Do we know, or what was the sort of nature of that explosion?
Yeah, I remember reading about that, but honestly, I don't know really who was behind that. I also read information that it was a mini nuke and that Israel was behind it. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if we talked about this in our last interview, but yeah, there's certainly a lot of technology. I know we talked about the directed energy weapons attack in Lahaina. There's so much hidden technology that the military has that they use to control weather and do all sorts of stuff that they don't want the general public to know about. So it could be one of these exotic technologies.
I don't know. I get really nervous when you've got Lebanon in a, I don't know, from all accounts, possibly a civil war there, and the destabilization and Hezbollah involved in that. And then you start to hear about these attacks on Israel from the north, and meaning from Lebanon. And it feels like when you've got, you know, maybe a three-pronged a fight against Israel, right? Gaza on one side, you've got Lebanon from the north, and then you've got potentially Syria and Iran involved in this too. This seems like, boy, I'll tell you what, if I were Israel and I were surrounded by all my enemies, I don't know that I'd be as belligerent as they are, but I guess that's why I don't run countries. This seems like a losing strategy to be surrounded and yet be so aggressive. Do you think, I wonder though, Do you think that, is there coordination between all these groups? Like, hey, let's all get them at the same time. Like, you come in from one direction, we'll come in from the north, and Iran can knock out all their communications with some EMPs or something like that. I mean, where would you see this thing if it does break out into a sort of a larger conflict? I mean, I wonder how this would play out.
Well, it's a very complicated situation. I mean, if you just even just look at Israel and Palestine itself, that's a very complicated thing. It goes back 75 years now. There's been lots of twists and turns with that. But then when you bring in other countries, it does get very complicated. For example, just up until March this year, the Saudis and the Israelis were very close, and they were cooperating together, despite the fact that Saudi Arabia is like potentially the biggest or the second biggest and most powerful country in the region. And so the background on that is that people have done great research exposing how the Saudi dynasty has Zionist roots, and some of them are crypto Jews. That's a whole other story. But the point is that Israel and the US have been working to basically the same kind of strategy of divide and conquer, of trying to get certain Arab states on board with more the Zionist side rather than the Palestinian side, which is kind of funded by Iran. And so that's why Iran and Saudi Arabia, they've had historically like a big division, because Saudi Arabia is the biggest Sunni country and Iran's the biggest Shia country. And, you know, there's some religious dispute they have that's apparently, you know, been a huge deal for them. But so I mean, Israel was using all that fracturing of the Islamic world to its advantage and trying to get the Gulf states and the Arab states there on its side. And it did that to some degree. But then what's been happening just in this year, and especially with China now becoming more and more powerful, is that China's becoming a powerful diplomatic force. And so it brokered a deal, like a rapprochement or a detente between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And it helped them kind of reestablish relations and connections and get over this feud they've been having of the, you know, Sunni versus Shia thing. And so now Saudi Arabia has been really breaking away from the US orbit more. And it has actually been quite rude to Biden and Blinken. Blinken went over there just a few weeks ago, and he was going to meet the Crown Prince, MBS, and MBS stood him up. And basically, like, meeting was scheduled for one night and he didn't turn up. And then he only had the meeting the next morning. So that it was a huge, like, you know, basically FU to Blinken. And so Saudi Arabia is not really playing along with the US anymore. It's happy to, like, you know, cut its, like, downgrade its ties with the US. And so things are really shifting there a lot. And so in the past, I might have thought, well, you know, Saudi Arabia and some of the countries around it would take Israel's side against this, but it doesn't seem like that. It actually seems like Saudi Arabia is pretty bothered, pretty angry at Israel for what's happened, because it kind of knows, like, this attack couldn't just have happened out of the blue. Israel must have known it was coming and allowed it to happen. Saudi Arabia knows that. So, you know, looking at the region, it's just so complicated, because then another big factor in this is Russia. Russia is being kind of careful to not really take sides, because there are actually a lot of Russians that have emigrated to Israel. There's a lot of Russian Jews there. So it likes its relationship with Israel. But we also know that Russia has come in and helped Syria a lot during the whole Syrian war. And there were a few moments where, like, Russian planes and Israeli planes were within kind of range of each other, or Israel was bombing parts of Syria and Russia was like, no, you don't. No, get back, basically. And so Russia's had to kind of take a firm stand with Israel a bit. And Israel kind of knows, I think, well enough not to kind of antagonize Russia too much. So there's still a little bit of these sides that are trying to not openly antagonize each other. So it's not like a black and white thing where it's just going to be Russia, China, Iran, and some other countries versus Israel and the US. Like, they still have, Russia and Israel have their own relationship. And so I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. I do know that there are a lot of, I mean, pretty much all the countries in that region, except for Israel, are like, hey, this isn't okay. You cannot just go in and, like, commit war crimes against Gaza. There needs to be a two-state solution. And Putin's been saying that. And so I just wonder what it's going to take for Israel to actually take that seriously and not just say, yeah, but then do another thing. Or what they've kind of done historically is they've deliberately taken certain villages and parts of the whole region there, so that it's isolated Gaza from the West Bank. And if you look at it, like, how are the two ever going to be connected? And so Israel did that deliberately. So now it's like, well, this kind of seems impossible for there to be, like, a Palestine that's going to be one continuous landmass that can be etched out, because Israel's built right through it. And it's like, it's not going to give up all its infrastructure now. So I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's a very complicated situation.
And they're on the record admitting that that was part of their strategy, was to divide him and make sure that you put Hamas in Gaza and you don't put him in the West Bank. And you say, well, this is, you know, and he just ideologically even fracture the Palestinians even more than this. And I wonder, though, this is the part, one of the parts that there's actually sort of a two-pronged approach to this. We have BRICS expanding, and the countries that they've just picked up, they picked up seven new countries. A lot of them are oil producing countries, right? So now you're starting to see Brazil, Russia, China, India, South Africa adding the UAE and adding some of these Gulf countries that might have had some sort of, you know, might have had some sort of emotional or philosophical allegiance to Israel in some way, shape, or form. But now they're in a business relationship through the BRICS, gold-backed currencies, all these things. Hey, sorry, man, it's nothing personal. It's just business. Like we've just signed up with this big consortium here. How much do you think the BRICS situation is going to impact Israel?
You're right. Yeah, it's huge. And the fact that it's expanding and taking all these new countries, it's going to have big implications, because you're right. Once the countries become involved economically, there is going to be more of an impetus for them to not want to upset each other politically and to kind of, you know, keep everyone on good terms. And these kind of things, you know, down the road, they may even develop into more of a political or military alliance than just an economic alliance.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about an economic alliance, because we have the Belt and Road Initiative, right? So we have this. This is a major factor. This is China's 40-year plan. Is we're going to bring this back. We're going to run it through the land, through you know, through Russia, down to Pakistan. We're going to run it through, you know, crossways, ups and down, north and south, you know, all over. And then we're going to run it also through the sea. We're going to take it through India. We're going to bring it up through the Suez. We're going to have North Africa involved. We're going to have Saudi Arabia involved. We're going to have all of these countries involved. And by the way, there's a shit ton of oil sitting off the coast of Gaza, right? Right. So whoa, we've got ourselves not just a religious fundamentalist sort of ideological war going on right now. We also have the infrastructure component of this that is in the early stages. You've got a lot of money at stake, a lot of trade at stake, and ports. And I wonder how the Belt and Road Initiative is going to play into this as well. Because like you said, you've got some countries that are going to be like, love to help you, man, but like, I got, you know, like I'm in this economic deal with these other groups and like, I don't really want to piss them off. We're just starting to form this, and this is going to be a huge thing for our country. We're going to be able to have a big port here. We're going to be able to get our raw materials out of Africa and to the rail, down the rail system and into this port. And we're going to need that. And we, you know, our country needs this access. And so I wonder about the Belt and Road Initiative and its relevance with this whole situation.
Yeah, the Belt and Road Initiative is a huge, huge thing. And rather than the US has taken a very strange, you know, perspective, but rather than trying to do something similar and actually build win-win relationships and build economies itself, it's like back to its old, like, well, all we really know how to do is invade and bomb and assassinate. So let's like destabilize all the countries that want to join it and fund separatist groups, just like we, you know, the US has always done. They got that from the British. Like they've been going on seeing how they can separate Taiwan from China or the Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang province. I mean, it's just the same old playbook. And so China is basically wanting to have stability. It wants everyone to be able to get along, or at least for there to be no wars, for this thing to be successful. Because if you've got all the people fighting in the area, they can't kind of roll out the infrastructure and have trade when there's wars going on. It's not going to work. They need to have enough stability so that there's no wars, so that all the trains and ships and everything can go through, like all the way to the entire Eurasian continent, all the way to Europe, right? So it's, I mean, you know, people, there's a lot of, especially on the right in the US, a lot of anti-China rhetoric and fear around it. And I mean, I understand, I wouldn't want to live in China. And I think it's obviously a dictatorship, but if you look at its foreign policy, it to me, it seems like, I don't see that it's been aggressive. I see that it's actually trying to build economic ties and build something good. And I don't see a problem with that. I think the reason why the US is feeling threatened by it is that every year we go on, China is getting stronger and stronger economically. It's taking more of a share of the world's economy, and there's no slowing down. It's basically like an inevitable rise that it's experiencing, and the US is having its inevitable decline. And there's really no amount of bombs and assassinations that are going to be able to reverse that. And so that's got the US leadership scared. But rather than trying to make come to terms with this and deal with it and accept it and find some kind of win-win solution, the US is just digging in its heels and kind of seeing how it can kind of control things militarily, and it's not going to end well. But yeah, I mean, the Belt and Road Initiative is a huge plan, and it is a big factor in this. China is definitely trying to band all these countries together in that entire region, the North Africa, all of Eurasia. And that's happening. Like, countries that used to be more and like in the Western corner and the US's corner are kind of breaking away, some of them slowly, some of them more quickly. We spoke about Saudi Arabia. I mean, that was a huge thing because Kissinger went over there and sealed that deal in the 70s with the petrodollar. And now for Saudi Arabia to be like, you know what, actually, we're going to start selling our oil in yuan. And yeah, we don't really need the US like we used to. India is kind of playing both sides a bit, but it's a part of BRICS. It's one of the three biggest countries of BRICS. So it hasn't totally done what Saudi Arabia has done to the US, but it's still very close to Russia and China. So yeah, all these countries are realizing they're part of Eurasia. They see their future in this Belt and Road Initiative, and they see a future with trading with all their neighbors around there. And they don't want to really upset the apple cart. And so yeah, this is affecting this whole area of the world and things in the future to come.
Well, maybe if the United States wasn't doing things like stealing $300 billion of Russia's money that it had, or kicking them off the SWIFT banking system, it's like, you know, the rest of the world sees this. They're not dumb. They understand. They're talking. You know, India and China go, you want this? Look at, I mean, at some point, they're going to do the same thing to us, right? So maybe we should work together. And India says, well, we'll buy Russian oil. We don't care. You sell it to us at a good price. Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, so in our arrogance, our America-centric arrogance, we have forced we've created these relationships, these business transactions, these relationships that might not have ever even happened. We really have nobody to blame. America, the American empire, has nobody to blame but themselves, because they are the ones that are doing this. I mean, it's if the bully takes your lunch money every day, or you watch the bully take everybody else's lunch money, at some point, you know, he's going to come for you, right? You know, I mean, it's going to happen. And I envision a scenario where the bully's walking down the hallway and turns a corner, comes around, and then there's everybody standing there going, now it's your time. And they put him in the locker. You know what I mean? They stuff his ass in there, because this is what we've been doing. I fear that this is inevitable. I would love to say that, like, you know, I mean, I don't see the American empire changing its ways unless it is forced to. And so the only way I can see it being forced to change its ways is if it doesn't have the magic printing press anymore. And that would be the dollar losing its reserve currency status. Now, you mentioned Saudi Arabia and the petrodollar arrangement, Kissinger. I'll tell you what, George H.W. Bush, if he was president now, he was the worst, in my opinion, one of the worst people of the 20th century. If he was alive today, Saudi Arabia wouldn't be talking to China. They would have never allowed this. This is some weak global negotiations on the Biden administration, Obama, maybe even Trump to an extent too, but more so the Democrats have treated this like they can do whatever they want. There's no repercussions. There are repercussions. If we get on the wrong side of all these countries and they decide that they are going to start accepting selling their oil for something other than the petrodollar, then the value of the dollar declines, the world's reserve currency status goes away, and next thing you know, we've got a big financial catastrophe on our hands. Do you think that's the Achilles heel of the American empire?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, what you just outlined, it's all true. And the fact that the US has had its hands on the printing press and then also being the world's reserve currency has basically allowed it to do all this stuff, but it can't go on forever. And other countries are realizing that they're breaking away, they're starting to conduct trade in other currencies, so that the share of the global economy that the US dollar has is going to start shrinking and going down. And just like other countries are going to start to kind of not want to really go in with the US and its wars and all of this. So I don't know how long all this is going to take, but we can see like the writings on the wall. The US empire it's already in decline. It's not going to, you know, going to be able to keep acting like it has been or doing this. But yeah, I mean, what I would love to see is awareness arise within just the US with the American people to the point where people really start to question, can we audit the Fed? Can we stop this insane money printing business that they've had for so long that is just funding all of these like ridiculous wars and everything else and basically impoverishing people by creating you know rampant inflation? I mean, I don't know when the mass consciousness is going to reach that level, but yeah, if we could get back control of the money, it would stop all of this.
I Jeff Berwick and I wrote a book called The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, and we were talking about how it's got to go away. In fact, we sort of differentiated between, we're not talking about America, we're talking about the American Empire and what all that entails. Can we talk a little bit about your book, Break Your Chains, Exposing the Grand Conspiracy and Presenting the Way Out? I like the presenting the way out part because I found that if left to my own devices, I'm pretty good at complaining. But that only goes so far without solutions. And so I always like it when people are offering, you know, pointing out the reality of the situation, the flaws, where we're headed and all of that. But at the same time saying, hey, listen, if you recognize this, like the way we recognize this, you can do the following thing. So when did the book come out and how come, you know, like, let's just talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so this is my first full-length book. It's 750 pages. It took me 7 years to write, so it's got like a lot of research into it. It came out a few months ago, July this year. You can get it on Amazon as an e-back or an e-book or paperback. The easiest way is just to go to my website, thefreedomarticles.com, and you'll see banner ads for it. Just click on that. It'll take you right through to the Amazon page. But basically, I wanted to write a book where I was outlining all the issues, some of which we've discussed today, like the geopolitics, you know, some of it we got into in our last interview, but basically, you know, outlining everything that's really kind of going on wrong with the world, but kind of taking it as the chapters progress deeper and deeper and deeper. So in this case, I get into pedophilia. I talk about Satanism and the satanic cult that I really believe is at the heart of all of this. And so then the second half of the book is like, all right, so now that we know this, what are we going to do about it? And I also divide the solutions onto the more kind of easy ones to begin with, like a physical plane, maybe the technological plane, then get into like more of the energetic and spiritual plane, because I feel like there's a big thing here that's going on that not that many people really talk about in the alternative media. That is basically we create the world with our thoughts, and all of us, just it's part of the human condition. We all have wounds and emotional triggers and all of this that we picked up through programming, parents, family, all of that stuff. And we carry these around. And so basically what the people in power are really doing is they're hijacking our imagination and they're programming our subconscious. And that's how they get us to kind of buy into and help create this nightmare world. And if we can take back control of our minds and our subconscious through some of this is just, you know, looking at the programming and the brainwashing within us and uprooting that, that's how we actually create a better world, because we're all creators. And there's no way that just a tiny relative handful of people at the top can control 8 billion people unless they're controlling their minds and their perception with all the programming. And so I really feel like I want to bring it back to like a place of empowerment for people that we can overcome this new world order. And a lot of it is just overcoming our own mental limitations, our beliefs, our programming, the emotional wounds and triggers that we've picked up, because that, you know, if we're walking around with that, then we're way more controllable and we're actually kind of feeding the beast.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is, you know, I think a lot of people are dismissive of that stuff, that we're creators, our imagination matters. Look, I'll tell you for those that are dismissive of it, just look at what the controlling class, the predator class, they focus a ton of their resources and efforts on trying to set narratives and get inside of our heads. And you're right. There's no way from a mathematical standpoint that this small of a group can control such a mass of humanity unless they convince us to control ourselves by limiting our beliefs and teaching us, handicapping us emotionally and preventing us from understanding the full nature of our reality, making things, psychedelics are illegal, as Terrence McKenna says, not because a loving government is worried that you're going to jump out of a third story window. They're illegal because they understand that you would see that the whole thing was a scam, And so I wonder though, We need this. We need to wake up. But boy, I go out and I'm on the road sometimes. I'm going through, especially through airports. Whenever I'm in airports, I'm always watching everybody. And I would love to be optimistic, man. But I've seen some people that are never going to figure it out until the very end. And I worry about this. I worry about how we break through to these people. Or do we? Do we just focus on those that we can reach and just sort of hope for the best for the masses? Or how do you approach this?
Well, I think every voice matters. And I think what I saw during the COVID scamdemic is that things can get really bad. And that can actually finally shake some people out of their slumber when they realize the new world order is coming for them. And it's coming for them in the shape of a mask that has to be on their face all the time, or a needle that has to go into their body that they don't want to, have. Suddenly they're like, oh, wait a minute. And it becomes a little bit more real for them. Whereas others like you and I could have seen this coming for a long time and are warning people. But sometimes things have to get really bad for people to really be shaken out of their slumber and realize what's happening. And as horrible as the COVID scandemic was, it did wake a lot of people up. It did make some people realize, wait a minute, things are not what I thought they were. And this thing is not just about a virus and the government caring for people's health and all of this other crap that they fed us. So yeah, I think all we can do is really keep putting out our message using the different media platforms you have available, whether it's books, articles, videos. It is easier to influence people around you rather than the strangers. But we all just have to find our voice and speak it. And that affects people. I mean, I don't know who's going to listen to this interview, but it's going to affect people that we probably have never even met. And then they may share it with someone else and it may affect them. So All of this is happening all the time. And, I mean, that's why I do this work. I wouldn't do this if I didn't think that ultimately humanity was going to triumph over this evil.
Yeah, I agree. That's how I feel too. I feel duty and obligation. Like if I know this stuff, and I'm not trying to say I know it all, but I know some things. If I know this and then I sit on this information, shame on me. I feel like an obligation to sort of talk about this to the extent that I can. And so do you. Where is the best place for people to find your work? Because you are doing really great work out there. And I would love for my audience to get your website bookmarked and use that as a reference tool, a place that they can check in, once a week and see what's going on and read your articles, because man, you're really right over the target. And I wish we were talking about unicorns and rainbows and fun stuff, but unfortunately it seems like we've got to talk about the mess, but you seem to be, right over the target on all this stuff. And I would love for people to support your work. What's the best way for them to do that?
Thank you. Yeah. So my main website is thefreedomarticles.com. So thefreedomarticles.com. And these days I do more videos than articles, but there are a lot of articles up there, videos. I also have a Rumble and Odyssey channel, so you can find me there as well. Grab my book, my latest book, which is Break Your Chains. That's really like a life work of mine at this point, that really goes in deep into like the conspiracy and what we can do about it. So I strongly encourage people to get that. I have some other books I've written on natural solutions for cancer, and also getting into the extraterrestrial and alien issue. I'm not afraid to go into any area. I just go where the evidence and the truth leads me. So I get into all sorts of areas. That's really what I'm about. I'm just about investigating, uncovering the truth, offering solutions, hoping to empower humanity so we can live as a free, free, open, abundant, peaceful humanity as we were designed to be, not and overcome this like ridiculous, evil New World Order system.
We can do it. They are programming us to believe that we can't, but we can do it, and they know we can do it. That's why they're fearful. That's Makia Freeman, everybody. Support his work. Go check out thefreedomarticles.com. And if you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can reach me at the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra-titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save
big time
for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by Sheen.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiland, ColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler, ColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.